This conference is being recorded.
This is Don Hussig with Loving the Earth Pollution Free Radio. Cancer prevention education focusing on those pollutant carcinogens to which large numbers of Americans are being exposed is much needed at this time. If an extensive educational campaign were to be implemented through a joint effort by government and non-government organizations, many people would be empowered to avoid unnecessary exposures. This exposure reduction would result in fewer cancer cases. Cancer Action New York has worked to educate the public concerning the matter of dioxin exposure cancer risk for well over a decade. The U.S. EPA has produced draft versions of a dioxin reassessment. The National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences publishes Environmental Health Perspectives, a research journal that has presented a number of research articles on the subject of dioxin exposure and cancer risk over the past years. How can we motivate government to take the further step of mounting a mass public health education campaign?
Well, I think the tide has turned, actually, in the last year, or less than a year now, with a new administration. And so now is the time to keep pushing the government and have non-government organizations continue to do the kind of education that we've been doing. We had an eight-year, you know, sojourn onto the dark side, as the former vice president used to say, or we called it the dark ages, and that period has ended. We have a new secretary of EPA, or administrator of EPA. We have a new director of the National Institute for Environmental Health Sciences, both women, both very good, very experienced, and in the case of the NIEHS director, very I would say, expert on dioxin and its health effects. So this is Dr. Linda Birnbaum, who she herself will continue to speak out about this, but I think the agencies will do more to move this whole question of dioxin exposure into the public arena and to, you know, take steps to reduce exposure.
Dr. Klepp, you have been involved in this for a very long time. I'm certainly, you know, we're looking to you as an expert in this whole matter of cancer and pollution exposure and cancer prevention education that would involve reducing the public's exposure to pollutant carcinogens. Just give us some of your background in this just before we get too far into this.
I think perhaps my first exposure to this problem of carcinogenic pollution and both workplace and environmental exposures to people that were avoidable was in the early 1980s when I first heard about the Woburn Childhood Leukemia Cluster. Actually, it was in the late 1970s. Woburn, Mass. Is a town where there was a cluster of childhood leukemia around some contaminated wells. There was a book and a movie called The Civil Action about this.
Right.
And I was director. I became director of the Massachusetts Cancer Registry because of that, because of the Woburn situation. So I was sort of tuned in to, in this case, water contamination with trichloroethylene and perchloroethylene, possibly causing excess childhood leukemia. I think subsequent research showed that that was the case. And so in the state cancer registry in the 1980s, we looked hard, actually, at other towns in Massachusetts where there was environmental pollution to see if there was some unusual pattern of cancer in those towns. And we saw it over and over again, multiple examples of that. Also, radiation from the Pilgrim Nuclear Power Plant seemed to increase the rate of leukemia in the people who live nearby. So since the 80s, I guess, I've been working on this. I did a doctoral dissertation in my epidemiology program where we looked at the causes of death in Vietnam veterans, Massachusetts Vietnam veterans, and we found there was an excess of a cancer called soft tissue sarcoma, and that's the one that's most strongly linked and was most originally suspected as being caused by Agent Orange or the dioxin component of Agent Orange. So that was in the 80s also, and then I continued to work on this. I was on the EPA Science Advisory Board panel that looked at the dioxin reassessment that EPA was doing first in the mid-1990s, then again in 2000, and actually been invited to be on the next one, if they have a next one, the final reassessment of the, you know, the EPA's view about how bad dioxin is.
Well, that's quite a background. please describe for the listeners the activities of the Cancer Working Group of the Collaborative on Health and the Environment?
Well, first I should say what the Collaborative on Health and the Environment is. As it sounds, it's a collaborative of multiple groups and organizations and individuals, a combination of advocacy groups, both local and national level advocacy groups, and professionals, people like me, academics, practicing physicians, nurses, and interested citizens who form a network that mostly exists on the web, on the internet. Mailings go out by email, and then there are periodic meetings, approximately monthly. There will be a conference call that anyone can participate in. And so on the conference call, there'll be a speaker talking about some new finding about what causes cancer or some new study that's come out that suggests that something we weren't aware of is now true. And so the group that's called the Cancer Working Group is the subgroup that of the Collaborative on Health and Environment that focuses on cancer. There are others on asthma, learning disabilities, and several other topics where the issue is environmental exposures causing these diseases. So the Cancer Working Group focuses on environmental and occupational carcinogenic exposures.
I was on the website of the Collaborative on Health and Environment quite some time back, probably 6 months ago, and the first time I ever came across something being referred to as the President's Cancer Panel that was described on the CHE website. What is the President's Cancer Panel?
Well, this is something that I believe was set up by the original act, which established the National Cancer Institute, and it was it's supposed to be an independent group of scientists or advocates, both actually, that were to hold meetings during each year and then issue a report on the topic for that year. So the current membership includes Dr. LaSalle LaFalle is his name. He's a surgeon and I think actually was formerly the president of the American Cancer Society and is affiliated with the Cancer Center at Howard University Medical School in Washington, D.C. D.C. He's actually the chair of the President's Cancer Panel. And then the other scientist on it is Dr. Margaret Kripke, who is a basic scientist, I think a biochemist actually, at the MD Anderson Hospital in Houston, who does research on the mechanisms of cancer. And then there's supposed to be a third member, and at the moment that's vacant. The previous member was Lance Armstrong, cyclist, guy that won the Tour de France multiple times, who is himself a cancer survivor. And then it was supposed to be, he was supposed to be replaced by Joe Torre, who's the manager of the Los Angeles Dodgers, but who is also a cancer survivor. And Joe, as far as I know, has not attended any of the meetings and hasn't been confirmed as the third member. But then it's staffed by people at the National Cancer Institute. So the bulk of the work of this panel, once these periodic meetings are held, is to write them up into a formal report, and that's done by the staff at the National Cancer Institute. And there are about half a dozen people, I think, involved in that.
Tell us about your interactions with the cancer panel.
Mine really were only from about a year ago, a little less than a year ago. The President's Cancer Panel started a series of four meetings on environmental and occupational causes of cancer. And so since that's been an issue that I've been working on for multiple years and have been working on with the Collaborative on Health and Environment, I submitted an outline of what I wanted to present to the President's Cancer Panel and then went and did it in September 2008 at the meeting that they had in East Brunswick, New Jersey. It was really on industrial carcinogens. That was the topic of that particular meeting. And there were about a half a dozen or maybe more, maybe 10 people making formal presentations. One after another, we'd come up to a microphone and the panel members and the staff would be sitting in this hotel meeting room, and all of this was recorded. And so what I had to say was both presented at the President's Cancer Panel and also posted on the CHE website. And then there were three other meetings of this group. I didn't attend the other three, but colleagues of mine, both at UMass Lowell, where I work as an adjunct professor, and also at the Collaborative on Health and Environment, attended the other three panels. They were on agricultural exposures, water and air pollution, and then radiation. So all of those took place over a period of several months, the last of which was in January of this year. And the President's Cancer Panel staff is currently drafting their report on what they heard.
Any heads up on when that report might become available to the public?
I think it'll be later this fall, perhaps at the end of the fall, say in early December, something like that. And it does go to the President. I don't know if the President Obama actually reads it, but somebody in his office or perhaps his science advisor will read it. And then if there are recommendations that the President's staff thinks make sense, then those will be forwarded to the relevant federal agencies. I would say probably especially in this case, the Environmental Protection Agency and Occupational Safety and Health Administration.
Sounds like some progress is certainly being made. Many environmental activists have come to believe that government agencies do the bidding of industry rather than striving to wield science for the protection of the public health. After a long effort to move the New York State Department of Health and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention to begin educating the general public on dioxin exposure cancer risk, I myself have come to hold this view. Are we right? Does industry run state and federal government here in the United States?
I think in the broadest sense, yes, that is right, and that is how it works. And it was especially true this past 8 years, where I think there are numerous examples of the heads of federal government agencies being called out for having taken money from the industry that they were supposed to be regulating. I think the one of the commissioners of the Food and Drug Administration actually may have served time, but he certainly was. He was indicted for a criminal offense of that type. Lester Crawford was his name. And then previous administrators have been either forced to resign or have resigned because they felt that they couldn't do their job with the impact that the industry had. And I think maybe the most widely known example was Christy Todd Whitman during the Bush administration. Actually, I think she got sick of trying to say that there was no such thing as global climate change or that there was no human impact on the climate, and that was the direction she was getting from the administration. So she resigned, and there have been other directors of federal agencies that basically either did the industry's bidding or left because they weren't willing to do the industry's bidding. All of this has been documented in books and articles. I don't think anyone needs to list them all here, but there's a book by Chris Mooney on, I think it's called Bush's Attack on Science, and there's a book called Doubt is Their Product by David Michaels, which talks about how industry and industry consultants influence the regulatory process. So in general, that is how it works, and the only thing that creates counter pressure is citizens and citizens' organizations, and occasionally legislators who respond to the insights that citizens have brought to them.
Well, then I'll just ask you one more question that that you haven't seen as just a little bit more of excitement in this interview. I'm wondering if you would just just in these moments here that we have together. Any beautiful ideas that you would be able to share with us about how the non-government part of our society, how the environmental groups, these types of entities, how can we do a better job and a bigger job in educating the public about pollutant carcinogens and cancer risk and how to avoid these exposures?
Well, it's obviously a big question with lots of ways to answer that, but I think what you're doing is an example of getting the word out, and in the case of, for example, dioxin, if we wanted to say more to in the federal arena or in the public arena about dioxin, there are sort of teachable moments that happen when, for example, there's a transformer fire, such as has happened in New York State a long time ago, actually in Binghamton, New York, but the World Trade Center is another example of it was way more than a transformer fire, but there was dioxin created in the fire that went on for days after the World Trade Center collapse. Those are, among other things, opportunities to say these are exposures that need to be prevented, and so that we should be alert to those opportunities to talk about dioxin and its health effects. Citizens in Michigan around the Dow Chemical Plant in Midland, Michigan, have been raising the issue of the pollution of the river downstream. I think it's called the, it's an Indian name, something like Tittabawassee River, or there's a floodplain that's been polluted by dioxin from the Michigan Dow Chemical Plant. And there's a group called the Eco Center in Michigan that's been raising that as a public issue and, you know, demanding that Dow clean it up for years. I guess that more of that is what we have to do. How do we become more effective at it? I guess depends on, you know, what access to the media we have, or how we interact with reporters in a way that convinces them it's a story worth talking about in the whatever their media is. Some people can create the media or create websites like yours, and I think that's actually a way in the future that more and more citizen communication, and to the extent that that eventually creates pressure on, say, elected officials who respond to networks that talk about and raise questions that legislators and administrative staff can respond to in regulations, that's basically what we have to keep doing. There's no magic wand, you know, that we can wave and all of a sudden everyone will see the light. As we all know, there's a counter-reaction that's usually created by industry or groups representing industry that feel that their economic interests will be hurt by further regulation. So there has to be a way to counteract that as well. And this is all part of being savvy citizens.
Yeah, we're trying with this radio project, and it is a bit frustrating in the beginnings because I keep looking at these downloads for the programs, and they're not big numbers. They're actually small numbers. And we're trying to spread the word about the existence of the project and trying to have something that will someday be a true network of this kind of media, this radio and the TV media that would address pollutant exposure and cancer. You know, that's just one part of this whole story, really, when you think of the many other diseases that are caused by other pollutant exposures.
Right.
It is frustrating in the beginnings, and I'm hoping that there will be just this gradual growth that will relieve some of the frustration and help us truly believe that the people are really getting the science and avoiding the exposure and getting the health that can result from that. Well, it's been great talking to Dr. Kolab. I really appreciate this. And I'll
You're welcome.
Just say goodbye now, and we'll hope for, you know, good results in the future.
Good luck, and keep it up.
Thanks, Dr. Kolab.
Right.
Have a nice day.
Bye.